Hello, I'm Sam, and this is Pilgrim Pit Stop. It's a podcast about following Jesus through life's highs and lows. And there's a new episode every other Friday, so I would really love it if you hit subscribe and tell your friends about it as well, if you enjoy what you hear. Here's a little clip of what's coming up today.
In Uganda, there's been this brilliant move to continue collecting waste plastic, but to turn it into PPE. And so there's now like visors and equipment that's made out of pollution.
All right, let's go.
For our titanic purposes of faith and revolution, what we need is not the cold acceptance of the world as a compromise, but some way in which we can heartily hate and heartily love it. We do not want joy and anger to neutralize each other and produce a surly contentment. We want a fiercer delight and a fiercer discontent. No one doubts that an ordinary man can get on with this world. Can he hate it enough to change it, and yet love it enough to think it worth changing? Can he look up at its colossal good without once feeling acquiescence? Can he look up at its colossal evil without once feeling despair?
Those are the words of G.K. Chesterton in his book Orthodoxy. And although they were written over 100 years ago, they are so relevant, I think, to the moment that we're living through. On this podcast, over the last few months, I've had the opportunity to speak to different Christians about what they're learning about following Jesus through this pandemic.
As I was saying to you earlier, it took me a long time before I was able to really articulate the depth of my anxiety to God. And when I did that, things shifted a bit. Of course,
love God and love your neighbor. And I think we're learning that our neighbors are not just the people who live next door, but our neighbors are everyone whose lives are affected by the way we live. And we're learning that a lot of people are affected by the way we live.
So
we
have a lot of neighbors. More time in observance, more time in like meditative prayer and stillness. Like I've discovered a different kind of peacefulness that I haven't maybe.
But as lockdown begins to ease and we start to imagine what the future might look like, we're faced with so many different questions. That is really what we're going to be looking at in today's episode. It's the 25th of June, 2020, and I'm joined by the person who is managing Tear Fund's reboot campaign, Jack Wakefield. Jack, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Brilliant to have you here. I'm looking forward to hearing about your life, your walk with Christ, and also this really exciting campaign that you've been putting together. I'd love to sort of start by going back in time a bit. I'm always interested to hear about these formative moments in people's lives. And I found this quote of yours, which I'll just read out, and then I'd love to kind of unpack it. There I was, sitting in a cow shed on some purple carpet at my first Christian summer festival, aged 15, knowing God loved me, but not really knowing what that looked like before heaven. I attended the youth seminars and a speaker from Tear Fund began explaining how God's church isn't simply a waiting room for eternity, but a body we're invited to be part of, a community with a mission given to them by Jesus to bring restoration to everyone and everything that sin has broken. She went on to explain the huge inequality in the world and my heart was broken. Talk to me a little bit more about that experience and what that meant for you at the time.
Yeah, sure. So, it really was one of those turning point moments for me. And I just understood the mission of God in a totally new way. I'd grown up understanding that like God loved me and that Jesus had died for me, and I'd done those bookmarks at Sunday school where it's like John 3:16, but you remove like "for God so loved the world" and you put in your own name, so it's like "for God so loved Jack that he gave his only son," and that was kind of my experience of the gospel, that Jesus had died for me. And then at this talk at a Christian summer festival, my mind was blown to like this much bigger understanding of the gospel. We talked about in Colossians 1, where it says that God was pleased to have all of his fullness dwell in Jesus, and through him to reconcile all things, whether things in heaven or on earth, through Jesus' blood shed on the cross. That it was Jesus' death that creates this chance of reconciliation for everything, not just me, but for like all that God has ever made. And then understanding that like God has a mission of restoration and redemption that includes me, but actually is way bigger, got me so excited. And I guess that was a big turning point for me, of just saying, actually, yeah, this God is at work in this world, and I'm invited to join in with his mission.
And how has being part of this, what you call community with a mission, directed your life?
I think it's slowly reorienting me from being focused on me to seeing like where God is at work in the world and how I can join in with him. That's probably going to be a lifelong journey of that kind of like dying to self and living for Christ. But I think that's been a big part of the challenge and the journey. And also, it's made walking with Jesus really exciting, because it's helped me to see that we're ambassadors of his coming kingdom. Like, we're people who participate in his kingdom, building work on earth. And so the invitation to join in with what he's doing really excites me, from random things like the way that I shop or eat to the people that I want to get to know in my community and come alongside, and the work that I do. So I think it's been a big reorienting process of, I'm not just saved so that I can go to heaven, but actually this kingdom coming, and I want to be part of seeing that happen.
And that restoration, actually being part of the world that God has entrusted to us. It's not just about, you know, eternity. It's actually about the here and now as well.
Yeah, totally. And I noticed that in John 20, you've got John's account of the resurrection story. And there's these beautiful parallels with Genesis. And that, like, reading through John 20 was one of those moments where I had like a reorienting moment where, so John 20 begins for early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, like Mary and the disciples go to the tomb, and then Mary stays outside the tomb and she's crying. And then she sees someone, and John says, thinking she was seeing the gardener, she says to him, blah, blah, blah. And those two moments in that story echo the story in Genesis. So the first verse about how it was early on the first day of the week and it was still dark is a lot like Genesis 1. You begin in the dark before light has been created. And then Mary seeing who she thinks is the gardener, I think is probably John joking with us a little bit, because of course she does. She sees the God of creation who walked in the cool of the evening breeze in Genesis 3. And so you've got these two moments in that passage where John's kind of hinting, saying, look, this is kind of a repeat or a refresh of a story that we've heard before. And then in case we miss those, Jesus goes and meets the disciples in the upper room, and they see his scars, and then he breathes life into them. He breathes the Holy Spirit into them. And that for me is like, ah, Genesis 2, like Jesus breathing life into this pile of dirt that he'd formed to create Adam. And again in that passage, you've got like, oh, there's something going on. And actually God is bringing restoration and renewal through what Jesus did on the cross. And that gets me really excited. I'm like, oh, Jesus is really at work, and we can join in with that mission. It's already underway.
And obviously, you know, you now work for Tear Fund. How long have you been working for Tear Fund?
I've been working for Tear Fund for about 3 years. But as you would have guessed from the quote, I've known about Tear Fund much longer. And yeah, I'd say a lot of my journey has run alongside knowing some amazing people who've been at Tearfund and discipling me along the way, I guess. Yeah. And so it's like a real joy to be there now. So yeah, I work in the campaigns team, been there for about 3 years. It's a good place to be, full of amazing people.
Yeah, I can imagine you're surrounded by really passionate individuals who just really want to see God's kingdom come in the climate, in different communities.
One of the things that's really blown me away, especially during lockdown, has been the ability to pray with people all around the world. So just yesterday, we were led in prayer by someone who works in our Nepal country office, and they were sharing with us some of the visions and dreams God had been giving them and about some of the things that are on their heart. And then as a global community, we were all praying together.
Wow.
And that's been a big part of my experience at Tearfund. And it's been amazing that that's grown over lockdown as well, as we've been able to connect digitally. But yeah, I've been blown away really by how really genuinely they are committed and focused on Jesus. It's really cool.
Yeah. And I guess being part of that work, you are able to pray very specific prayers, actually, for parts of the world and kind of areas where you're working. And that must be a real kind of privilege, actually, to sort of see into those parts of the world and be able to then lift those things up to God in prayer in a very specific way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it feels like a real honour and privilege.
Let's talk about the reboot campaign, which you're managing, and just really interested because this is a campaign which is looking to the future. And as you know, as lockdown begins to ease, and as we start to come out of lockdown, this is a campaign which is thinking, what kind of world do we want to create, and what kind of church do we want to be part of going into the future? And it's a really fantastic campaign. There's an accompanying paper which I would encourage people to have a read, and in that paper there's quite a lot of space given to lament. And I'm just interested, what do you see as the kind of the biggest things that we need to be lamenting right now?
Yeah, when we were putting the paper together, we felt it was so important to have that space to pause, because the paper is full of different ideas of how this is an opportunity for the world to be rebooted and reimagined and made fairer. But it's really easy to jump over the devastation and straight into the, we've got new opportunities and there's lots of exciting things that could happen. We thought, actually, no, as Christians, we are called to mourn with those who mourn and grieve with those who are grieving and to feel the pain of others. I'm really struck in Genesis 4 where, I always get them muddled up. I think Abel dies, Cain kills Abel. And the Lord says to him, like, where's your brother? What have you done? And then God says, the voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. And there's this idea that, like, God feels the pain of people who are suffering and people who have died. And we're called into that. And I think it's important in conversations about this crisis and the opportunities it brings to really grieve with those who are grieving. There's almost 500,000 people who've died now around the world. And in many countries in Latin America, in Asia, case numbers continue to climb. It's thought many places in South America haven't peaked yet. And the huge impact is just mind-blowing. And then because of the lockdowns and all of the economic impacts, it's thought that like, up to 60 million more people could be living in extreme poverty in the next few months, which is a horrific thought. And so it's important that we really engage with the devastation that's caused by this and to lament. And as Christians, we can often jump to hope and say, but we know the God of restoration, or we know the God who redeems. But actually, lament is a really legitimate place to stop and to say, this is a full response. Actually, the suffering and brokenness we see in the world is heartbreaking. I love the kind of dialogue that you see in the wisdom literature in the Bible. So between like Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and Job, of grappling with this idea of suffering and whether or not we've like deserved it because of sin, or whether it's just like impacting us and it's not God punishing us. And that kind of conversation happens between those books. And in Ecclesiastes, there's a kind of a, like, you're allowed to rest in the lament without having to jump to hope. And so I think we wanted to make sure that there really was space to grieve with those who grieve.
Yeah, I think what I love about this campaign as well is how kind of specific it is in its, you know, often we hear of campaigns and ideas that are very general and don't really, you sort of think, oh, it's a good idea, but I'm going to struggle to see how that's actually going to make a practical impact. What I love about this campaign is that you list five steps to a better world. And to be honest, I'd really just love to spend the rest of our time together delving into those five steps, if that's all right, and just really unpacking them and talking about why that's important, why that's in the campaign. So the first step you've got is respond. And I'd love for you just to kind of unpack what that means and why that's significant.
Yeah, sure. So the first step, the respond one, is really about the immediate response to the pandemic. And it's calling on the UK government and their role within the G7 and G20 and all these global bodies to make sure that a vaccine to coronavirus as it's developed or different treatments that we discover are shared with the world's poorest people, but also that medical equipment and PPE is shared as well. At the beginning of this crisis, I don't know if you remember, but in the UK there was a lot of criticism of the government for not sourcing enough PPE and masks and things like that. And we were pricing others out of the market because rich countries like us and the US could pay whatever required to get these resources, which then meant the poorest countries couldn't get access to them. And so, yeah, we're really calling for the response to be one that includes developing countries, and the vaccine is shared with them, and that people who make vaccines in developing countries as well, those manufacturers will be included in the process. So it can be widespread and reach those who need it. So yeah, really calling for a sharing of resources and a global togetherness. We're in this crisis together, and we're not going to get out of it unless we all come together.
Yeah. And are you sort of specifically lobbying the government on that, or how are you trying to get that message through to the government, to the UK government in particular?
Yeah, sure. So we've been working with lots of other organisations. So I just got off of a call with CAFOD and Christian Aid, two other organisations similar to Tear Fund. And there's lots of other coalitions as well. There's a big Build Back Better coalition with loads of organisations in. Mm. And so we're kind of collating our voices to amplify this call for like a fair response, global response to the crisis. Yeah. And we've sent a letter. Our CEO at Tear Fund has sent a letter to Boris Johnson, and we've been encouraging lots of Tear Fund supporters to be sending letters and emails as well to make sure that it gets up to the top of the agenda.
And then the next step you list is reset. What does that mean in the context of this campaign?
Yeah, sure. So the reset one is all about cancelling developing country debt, especially in this year and next year, because there's a huge need to respond to this crisis. There's 3 billion people without access to clean water. And so we urgently need to create some way of financing huge developments to help people access clean water and to get access to healthcare and things like that. And so we're saying that actually in the developed world, we've taken all sorts of crazy measures to make sure people's incomes are safe and businesses survive. And actually a fair response and a just response would be to allow that same kind of support to be available for people across the continent of Africa and in other countries who are struggling. We've given debt relief, as it were, and cash payments to our own citizens. We've had like mortgage breaks and the furlough scheme. And so really we're saying by cancelling debt repayments, we release a whole bunch of money to allow countries to respond to this crisis. And I think this one's really bubbled up to the top of the agenda as well with the conversations around Black Lives Matter, that actually there's a real colonial history to debt and to the global economy that we find ourselves in. And that really the only right thing to do is to be cancelling debt and making space for these countries to afford a good response for their people. And as part of it, we're also asking for some extra emergency finance. So probably if you think about how much we'll spend on our economic recovery in the UK, we're calling for about 1% of that to be offered to the poorest countries to help them to respond. So that money would make a huge difference, but it's a tiny fraction of what we'll be spending on our own recovery.
Yeah, that's a really powerful statistic, because I think people will often hear, you know, what you're saying, and they might jump to conclusions and say, actually, we haven't got enough resources. We can't do this. It's not possible. But when you put it like that, it's such a small proportion of spending. And I think, it's completely doable. It's just a matter of will, isn't it, rather than resource.
Exactly. Yeah, I was talking to an economist about it, and they were saying that actually, from an economics perspective, it's like a balance of risk. Like, the far riskier thing is to not support these countries and see this pandemic continue to spread and devastate so many communities. Mm-hmm. And actually, at such an unprecedented moment where so many crazy measures are being taken, that actually it's not that high a risk to be cancelling debt and creating emergency finance, because we're doing it for ourselves already. The much higher risk is to not respond right now. Mm.
The third step is recognize. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so this one is about the role of faith groups in the response to the crisis. So those first two are very immediate. Mm. We're still in the pandemic, even though places are opening up in the UK at the time of us recording this. We're still in the pandemic, and so we need those urgent responses. And then this one is kind of the medium term of what it looks like to help communities to start recovering. And we're saying that actually churches and other faith communities should be central to the response. They know their communities really well. They're often the best people to find where the most vulnerable are located or who is at highest risk. They know their people and they've been there for a long time. But their role is often overlooked by big international agencies. Faith groups have so much to offer, and so we're asking that they be a priority voice in the space when it comes to recovery. Mm. Our work at Tear Fund is all based through the local church. In the 50 or so different countries that we work in, we come alongside the local church and help them to assess the needs of their communities and work out what resources they already have and help to lift people out of poverty through what they already have and how their community can support one another. So we've seen that the church is really powerful and can bring real transformation. And so we're asking for them to be a central voice to this as well.
Yeah. Having the global perspective on this that you do, how have you seen churches responding? Have you been kind of quite surprised in some ways by how churches have been responding to this crisis?
Yeah. In many places, churches have been at the front of responding to supporting their communities. I recently heard of a brilliant story in Uganda. We do a lot of work on plastic pollution and its impact on people's health. And in Uganda, there's been this brilliant move to continue collecting waste plastic, but to turn it into PPE. And so there's now like visors and equipment that's made out of plastic pollution and being given to people who are on the front line, which is an amazing story of the church's creativity in this response.
That's wonderful. That's almost like solving two problems at once, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Phenomenal. And that's it, isn't it? I think this has been a time where churches have had to be creative in the ways that they respond. But I think it's at times like this that we're reminded that actually God is creative. The first verb in the Bible is create, and God loves it when we are creative.
And one thing I've been really encouraged by actually is at TIFF, we helped with others to produce some basic information that communicates like what coronavirus it is and the best ways to protect yourself, because there's been so much fake news and misinformation spreading, and the church has been a real champion of spreading accurate information. And so a really simple thing is just putting some of that information together and churches being able to spread it around their communities of saying, this is accurate information for you, this is how we look after ourselves, And I'm sure that will have a huge impact, people actually finding the right information. Yeah, just a really simple thing. And because churches are based in their communities, they know their people, they're able to get that information out really quickly.
Yeah. So I guess that's, yeah, that's more of a sort of medium to long term. And I think this fourth one is also a more medium to long term type aim. So it's recover. What do you mean by recover?
Yeah, so this is moving towards the opportunity that this moment brings us. So obviously so much of the world has been on pause, much of our economic activity, flights have been grounded, there's been a lot that's been on pause. And so we have this unique opportunity to choose a new direction. We can return to how it used to be, or we can take this moment to pause and reflect and think, actually, how have we seen the world differently during this time, and how do we want to move forward together? And I think during this crisis, we've seen the real injustice of inequality, both racial inequality and economic inequality globally, for the real different experiences that people have had of coronavirus. And we've also seen the damage that we've done to creation. During this time, people will have gone for nice walks and heard birds singing rather than traffic noise. And in places like in areas of China, loads of lives have been saved because of lower air pollution, which is a really bizarre thing to think about. Mm. And so it gives us an opportunity to say, actually, how do we want to recover? Do we want to go back to bad air quality and high levels of inequality? Or do we want to choose a new direction? And so this recover one is about imagining a better direction for the global economy. So thinking about how can we help economies to grow again, but in a way that doesn't damage God's creation, and to bring more equity and equality into that as well. So thinking about how we can shift the balance of tax away from the poorest people so that they can be starting their businesses and generating income again and getting the economy going. And so, yeah, it's about a big global recovery.
And in terms of what, you know, I've been reading, it seems that very few people want life to go back to the way it was before the pandemic. I think, and there's just this kind of awareness that something as simple as, air travel, which we would have thought, 5 years ago, it would be impossible. There'd be no way that you'd have a time where all of the planes were grounded and there was no international travel. And, you know, a tiny microscopic virus appears in China, and a few months later, that is the case. And yeah. I guess maybe there's a waking up moment in this for us as humanity, that we, you know, these things are possible. The things that felt like they were impossible actually are not, you know, they're not set in stone. And again, it comes down, I guess, to that issue of willpower, doesn't it? Do we want this to be the future, or do we want this to be the future? And this kind of
this
juncture in the road that we have right now, which direction are we gonna go as we come out of this?
Yeah, I mean, even the presence of coronavirus is a big waking up call. Some people have talked about this being like, oh, it's just a random natural disaster. But actually, when you look at the science, the way that we've caused mass deforestation, or we've mass produced meat in a really unsustainable way, all of those kinds of ways that we've damaged and exploited creation have increased the risks of viruses jumping species. They make it far more likely. And as climate change continues to accelerate, viral pandemics like this one are at risk of becoming much more frequent. And so even just the presence of the virus itself should be enough to wake us up and say, actually, what kind of world do we want going forward? Is this it, or is there something better?
Well, that really ties in, I guess, with the fifth and final aim or step to a better world, which is renew. So let's talk about that. And it's I think the climate, I've certainly felt like climate change is something that has been pushed up the agenda by coronavirus and by this pandemic. So can you talk a little bit about what this step of renew looks like for Tier Fund?
Yeah, sure. So this renew one is very much focused on the UK. So the previous one was about the global recovery, and then this one is about what it looks like for us to respond in the UK. And some research has been done recently modeling different kinds of economic recovery. And there's an organization, TUC, who published some research that says, actually, if we move towards a more sustainable economy, we can create 1.24 million jobs. So things like fitting different boilers rather than relying on gas, or reforesting land, or upgrading railways. And so there's loads of opportunities that we can rebuild something better, and we can create jobs and get the economy going. Really, if we choose to make this a green recovery, the evidence is clear that the recovery will be stronger. It will create more jobs and it will be longer lasting. And so that's a big part of this one, is trying to communicate that, saying actually there's a huge opportunity to do things differently and it will be good for the economy too. And then it's also thinking about that inequality thing again. So saying that actually at the moment in the UK, income is taxed at almost 10 times the rate of wealth. And saying, is that really the right balance? As we're trying to get people working again and open up the economy, do we want the weight of tax to be on people who are working hard? Or do we want to rebalance that to stop the gap between rich and poor from growing so wide? And really encourage people to be working. So shift the balance of tax away from the poorest and onto the polluters is kind of the inequality part of that renew option.
And how kind of hopeful, when you think about these different steps, how hopeful are you that we will be taking these steps?
Yeah, I think there's been real momentum around this idea of building back better and creating a new normal that looks after each other and the planet better. I think it's got real traction, and the general public clearly want it. There's been poll after poll of people saying that actually we really want to do something different after this. We don't want to go back to the old normal. Yeah. And when I talk to people on my street or in my street WhatsApp group, there's a real consensus that we could do things differently, but it really needs government action. If you think about transport as one example, lots of us have driven a lot less during this time, and maybe cycled more and gone for runs, but unless there's good infrastructure for that, if there's better public transport and cycle lanes, then it'll be really hard for us to keep that up. And so that's why we need government action. So I'm hopeful there's real momentum behind this, but these are big asks, and we're trying to cast a big vision of what we believe the world could be like and what we could move towards. And so I'm hopeful, but we'll have to see.
Yeah. But I think big vision is what we need right now, isn't it? And, you know, we're in a big crisis. So we need big vision to get out of it and to build back better. Could you just let people who are listening know how they can get involved in this campaign?
Yeah, sure. So there's some easy ways to get involved. If you head to the Tear Fund website and go to www.tearfund.org/reboot, then there is resources there to help you write a letter to the Prime Minister or to send an email. And there's also an animation on there and a discussion guide. So if you wanted to get a few people together from your church or your community to think about this opportunity to build back better, then there's resources for you there. And over the rest of this year, we'll be adding more different ways to be getting involved. So if you do take that action, let us know and we can keep you updated with all the different ways that we'll be joining together to try and see the world rebooted in a more fair and more equal way.
Awesome. Well, Jack, it's inspirational stuff, and I love the work that you're doing and the whole team at Tear Fund are doing. So thank you for coming on this podcast and for sharing this vision with us.
No worries. It's been a real joy joining you. Thank you for having me.
Was my conversation with Tear Fund's Jack Wakefield, and many thanks to Jack for coming and sharing about that brilliant campaign. Do check out their website to get involved. Fab. Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Make sure that you've hit subscribe, because there are some really, I think, exciting conversations lined up with different people, and they will be released every other Friday. Lots of different conversations with people who are following Jesus through life's highs and lows, and also some big kind of adventures for this podcast planned further into the future. So yeah, make sure that you've subscribed, and do tell a friend or two about it if you've enjoyed what you've heard today. Many thanks, as always, to Johnny Davies for creating the theme music, and to Thomas Thorogood for the jingles. Until I speak to you again, I hope you have a really great time, and God bless. God bless.
No one doubts that an ordinary man can get on with this world. Can he hate it enough to change it, and yet love it enough to think it worth changing? Can he look up at its colossal good without once feeling acquiescence? Can he look up at its colossal evil without once feeling despair?